song. Keep it playing.
Is what we need with peace and love and harmony, unity, the strength and assured success.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week for your listening eargasm pleasure. And my very special guest is Dean Henderson. Dean, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me, Vincent.
Now, Dean, I'm unfamiliar with who you are and what you do, so if you'd enlighten me, I'd be much obliged.
Great. I'm an author. I've written 4 books, Big Oil and Their Bankers in the Persian Gulf, Four Horsemen, Eight Families in a Global Intelligence, Narcotics, and Terror Network, and then The Grateful Unrich, Revolution in 50 Countries, which is a travelogue of my travels to 50 countries. And then Sticking It to the Matrix, which is kind of a practical guide to getting out of the system and not having a job, and then extracting from the system as much as you can. And then Das Kartell, Federal Reserve, which is in German language. That's basically chapter 19 of that Big Oil book that's been published by Kopp Verlag in Germany. And then I read a weekly column called Left Hook, and people could subscribe to that for free. And, it's just, I call it a weekly whack at the global oligarchy. So it's just, trying to expose the people that run the world, you know, the bankers and Illuminati and whatever you want to call them.
I love it how they use both the left mainstream political parties and the right mainstream political parties. They come at you, and still the bankers win. It was like, I came up with a phrase. It was like, watch out for the right jab and the left hook.
Yeah. Well, my view on that is there are no left political parties at all, and both in America anyway, you got Democrats, Republicans, and both the Republicans are basically fascist. The Democrats are far right. There is no left in America, no genuine left. I mean, genuine left would be like Hugo Chavez, Che Guevara, Castro, people that weren't in bed with these people. So yeah, they try to play games. They try to, you know, of course, there's all kinds of skullduggery going on and smoke and mirrors going on. But in the end, I'm a leftist because I believe I'm a worker. I'm, if you've been on a job site behind a shovel for a long time and you've been exploited by a boss over and over, you've seen others and you've seen people in the third world exploited by these money people, you know, it's just made me a leftist. So I think the whole idea that the right-left paradigm doesn't exist is really a dangerous idea. It's been put forward by Alex Jones and some of these people who I don't really know about too much. I think there is a left-right paradigm, but I just think that the right, it's just everything's right. Everything's to the right now. And I don't know if it's the same in New Zealand, but...
We live in a pretty heftily socialist country. We've got universal health care, taxation completely out of control. We're fighting foreign wars for people, for political gain and things of that nature. People are having their rights taken away from them. It sounds like classic socialism to me.
That's, you know, look, man, I think...
And we've got a private central bank. And we've got a private central bank, which is another central bank.
Yeah, exactly. So it's really not socialism. So it's just another one of their little games. I mean, real socialism, to me, the only real socialists that ever existed in this world, honestly, were the indigenous people. You know, the Maori, the Lakota, the Navajo, whoever. I mean, basically, there was a council. And all socialism really is sharing, you know, sharing the wealth. Well, there's no sharing the wealth going on in this world. I mean, if you look at people who say Obama's a socialist, Obama's not a socialist. Obama's a whore for the bankers. He's just a punk for the bankers. There's no socialism. There's no sharing. There's nobody. The poor get poorer. The rich get richer. That has nothing to do with socialism. And I just think it's a real important thing to point out because you know, like I guess, as I said, I'm a conspiracy guy, but I'm also a revolutionary. It's kind of a totally different genre. In fact, maybe there's just a handful of us doing it, because, you know, a lot of the conspiracy people are kind of righties, even though they won't admit it. You know, these are the people that say there's no right-left paradigm, but actually they vote Republican in this country.
So do you believe that, you know, say people who create businesses and create wealth, manufacturing and so on and so forth, should at the barrel of a gun have their wealth taken off them so it can be redistributed to workers?
No, of course not. I've been an entrepreneur too. I used to have a business. So I sell my books. I was a street vendor. I'm a farmer. I sell the grocery stores. That's ridiculous. But I do believe that the Federal Reserve, for example, should have their assets taken at the barrel of a gun. You're damn right.
Yeah. And,
you know, I mean, it's all about, you have to use common sense. A lot of it's just common sense, and there is no common sense. But no, of course not. Entrepreneurs should be left alone. But look, when I was in Nicaragua in 1984, Sandinistas were in power. I never saw so many entrepreneurs on the street as I've seen at that time in Nicaragua. And these were the people who were, yeah, they were the Marxist communists who, you know, were going to seize all the people's land. And then you start talking, and actually there was even the rich ranchers who they left alone who cooperated with them. But there is going to come a time when these rich people are going to have to pay. And I mean, the super rich, the people that don't, these people don't create jobs. Goldman Sachs doesn't create jobs. They destroy jobs. They make a living destroying jobs. They sit there pushing a keyboard, crunching numbers, making, you know, $1 billion a year, being lazy fucks, excuse my language, and they don't
you
do
can't
nothing.
Say that on FCC regular
Sorry.
Radio.
Sorry.
Sorry. I apologize to the affiliates and the listeners as well.
Delete.
Continue.
Yeah. Delete. But, you know, they're lazy. That these people, and so this whole myth that, oh, these people are such hard workers and they create all jobs. What about, you know, they're the job creators? What about the boss creators? What about the workers? What happened to respect for working people who sweat and toil and build these empires, and even the small businesses, even build the small businesses for people? They get no respect. And that's a very dangerous trend that's going on in this world. And it's got to end. If we have any hope of getting rid of this cartel, getting rid of this Illuminati, getting rid of this thing we're talking about that we agree on, you know, if we're going to get rid of these guys, we have to get our ideology straightened out, I think.
Well, you know, you're right, and you talked about the lack of common sense, which is why I've now renamed it platinum sense, because it's one of the rarest metals on Earth.
You got that right. There's not a lot of it. But it's just the media is controlled by these people, and, you know, the Zionist media, and they control the very way we think, our patterns of thought, the way we put things together. You know, we're allowed to debate within this box, and yeah, it's the Democrats and Republicans here. And now it's the Alex Jones, there's no right-left paradigm. And now there's like a conspiracy thing that's becoming popular. It's popular to believe in conspiracy theories. It doesn't matter. You know, it's dangerous because, you look, my big oil book, it's got 958 footnotes. It's not conspiracy theory. It's conspiracy facts. You know, there's no theory in that book. And people got to be careful of throwing stuff around. It's just they heard it over here. They heard it over right now. They got Obama, the IRS case, the Benghazi case. Well, it's all garbage. Benghazi, it's like you're talking about a memo, and meanwhile you're funding these same people in Syria that killed your ambassador in Libya. You're not talking about that? No, they're not talking about that. Left Democrats or Republicans. Nobody's talking about why are we funding these Islamists who killed our ambassador in Libya. They're talking about a memo, where, or some stupid stuff. You know, the IRS thing's the same thing, the Tea Party. These guys are an appendage of the Republican Party. They're an appendage of them. So you can't get a 501c3 status and promote a political party. You just can't do it. So, of course, they're going to be investigating. And then you have the Associated Press thing. And that was a very serious national security leak, probably to Israel. I think our government, you know, Obama gets a lot of crap, and he's not perfect. But I think there's at least a shred of decency in this guy. And he is going after the corporations with the SEC. And he is going after the Fox News of the world through the FCC. And this is why there's this huge media barrage right now against him, because this is how they work. Like, you never heard about this when Bush was president, Bush number one, and there was several environmental groups in Missoula, Montana, where I live, who couldn't get a 501c3. Never heard about it. It wasn't any kind of news. And they were saying, well, they're allied with the Democrats. Well, most of my friends didn't want anything to do with either. They voted for Ralph Nader and the Green Party. But still, I mean, it's just a double standard, and everything is out of whack. And we've got to get back to where we can at least have an honest discussion about political ideology, revolutionary thought. I mean, historical things that did exist, do exist. I mean, Mao Zedong did exist, you know. Ho Chi Minh existed. You know, the Shining Path and crew did exist.
Yeah.
And this is what I'm talking about.
Well, like Mao didn't, are you talking about Mao like killing 80 million of the Chinese and taking over the country with 1% popular support at the barrel of a gun, which he said is the key to political power?
Well, it obviously is the key to political power. I mean, look at who's got the guns now. So he was right about that, wasn't he? And he was also right because Marx said the revolution would start in the factories and the cities, but it won't. It'll start in the countryside. It'll start with the peasant farmers, and it has ever since. And 80 million, I think, is an exaggeration. I mean, I think that's more propaganda you're getting from the bad news people. But, you know, it wasn't perfect, of course. But look, I mean, these people have tried throughout the years to make their lives better for their people. And every time, you know, somebody comes out and tries to do something for their people, they get run down in the media. That's why we're supposed to hate Gaddafi. That's why we're supposed to hate Iran. That's why we're supposed to hate, you know, look at the current bunch that we're supposed to hate. And look how, I mean, I work with Press TV, the Iranian TV, state TV station. It's a state-run TV station. Okay, that's socialism. You have a state-run TV station in New Zealand? We don't. There's no socialism here. Iran's a socialist country. That's why they hate them. They get free, they hand out rations, you know, people get free
I don't think it's necessarily that they're socialist. I think it's because they have a public central bank instead of a private central bank owned by the Rothschilds, just like Gaddafi did.
That's real socialism, I'd argue, because that's real socialism. When you get down to nationalizing the big stuff, look, I'm all for letting private enterprise run most things, but you got to nationalize the Federal Reserve, the private central bank. You got to nationalize your big oil companies. You got to nationalize your big mining companies. You got to nationalize your big insurance companies and get rid of insurance as a concept and just have a no-fault system where you deal with doctors, you deal with the people that got hurt. You don't know lawyers, no more insurance companies, and you nationalize your grain processing sector. So Cargill's and Monsanto's of the world are the middleman for the farmer and the consumer. That's about it. But you have to nationalize those things, and you have to have land reform. And you have, you know, there's certain things you have to be serious about if you're going to call yourself a socialist. And people are throwing around this word socialist way too loosely because it really doesn't exist hardly at all in this world, except in Iran and Syria and North Korea and Cuba. For example,
well, see, and what's interesting is that, you know, what people have called socialism, like, say, communist China or the USSR and things of that nature, they've had massive, terrible human rights track records. And then people come out and say we want more socialism after that fact and say that those people just didn't get it right.
Well, you look at, okay, China in 1973, they taught Deng Xiaoping, Henry Kissinger, have a meeting, start arming Pakistan jointly. At that point, China was no longer into the Mao era. I mean, Mao himself called Deng Xiaoping a capitalist roader. That's what he called him. And that's what's happened in China. I've been to China. I've seen it. They don't, you know, when I was there, they were talking about they don't get free education. They don't get free anything anymore. It's all gone. So China is basically a Walmart platform. It's a place where Walmart assembles stuff. 90% of the ships coming into the port of Long Beach, California, the biggest port in the country, are actually Walmart products from China. There would be no China, modern-day China, without Walmart. There would be no modern-day Walmart without China. Nothing socialist about that. So, yeah, the whole thing at Tiananmen Square, for example, you know what they were doing? They were cracking down on socialists and communists. You know what they did in Iraq? You know what Saddam did when we put him up to it? He cracked down on the Communist Party of Iraq. That's what he did. That's when he worked for us. So why did we take out Milosevic in Yugoslavia? Because he was a socialist, that's why. Because he made tractors and he made Yugos and he made machine parts. And they bartered them with Iraq and they bartered them with Iran. They bartered them with, you know, other socialist countries. Now, that's socialism. But this idea that, all the socialists are bloodthirsty, they're just going to grab all your – that's just crazy. It's just crazy. I mean, Norway, the most successful country in the world economically – it's probably the closest thing to a, you know, mixed economy socialist country that we have as an example. They have a nationalized oil company, you know, for example, and they have the highest standard of living in the world.
Well, what I found interesting about Finland is that they have very little ethnic diversity. There's only 500 people, 500 total per year allowed to actually gain residency in Finland. And studies have proven that when you have a monoculture, racism, racial violence and things of that nature don't exist. Not reduced, but don't exist at all, because there's nothing to be racist about.
Yeah, that's probably true. But, you know, it's also really cold there.
Yeah. So,
you know, a lot of, you know, people from the global south probably, you know, don't want to go there.
Yeah. But, can I finish that as well? Because, you know, by comparison, New Zealand is a very racist country in a lot of ways. And we have 50,000 immigrants coming in per year. And we're a country that is like less than a third of the size of Finland. Okay.
Right.
You know, and it's fomenting racial tension. And anybody who says that if you bring in lots and lots of different ethnic minority groups, it causes racism among the ignorant, gets called a racist.
Right. Well, I think it's by design. It's the same thing with the Mexican immigrants here. Who benefits? Cui bono, right? So follow the money. Well, the corporations benefit because they get a lot of cheap labor. I mean, all of the vegetables in this country are picked by poor Mexicans in California. So you get two things accomplished. You push down the wage base for white Americans. And secondly, you divide and conquer, which is the classic British Empire strategy. So you get white people hating brown people, hating black people. That's what they need. They need men hating women, environmentalists hating loggers, and, you know, everybody hating everybody. And we got to drop all this divide and conquer stuff, and we got to get to the root, which is the Illuminati, eight families, bankers, and mainly the Rothschilds, who are worth over $100 trillion. And let's talk about that, because we have nothing in common with these people. Not at all.
Not at all. I mean, when was the last time you sacrificed a child and bathed in their blood?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's down to that, and we need to, you know, unite people, not divide people. Which is why, you know, even though, yeah, I call my thing left hook, I'd say most of my subscribers are libertarians or, you know, a little bit to the right or whatever. But I don't care. I mean, we talk through these things. We'll get through these ideology things. But we have to continue to expose these Illuminati people, man, because they're evil. And they're destroying the planet. They're destroying everything.
Yeah, that's right? Precisely correct. And, you know, and you can debate ideas and things over and over again. And the only thing that really makes a difference between an idea is an action, all right? So, you know, what are people willing to do? And, you know, that's the only ideologies that I don't like is the ones that, you know, encourage murder and theft and things like that. And the only ideology I think that encourages murder and theft on a grand scale are the bankers. We'll be right back.
Monopoly capitalism.
We'll be right back after the break with Dean Henderson.
Yeah, yeah, and no one like me, yeah, yeah, yeah. Congratulations, you made it. Welcome to the Crusader. It's been a long time coming, yo.
Yeah,
but I'm here now. So what you wanna do?
Huh?
How many dudes you really know? Flow. Like this, like this, like this. Let's do it. How many dudes you know vote like this? How many dudes you know flow like this? Not many, if any, not many, if any. How many dudes you know got the skills to go and rock a show like this? I don't know anybody.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Ain't nobody rock a show like this, except me. Yeah, and the uniquity of this show is based purely on the comedy of it. Okay, just because there's a bunch of ruthless criminal sociopathic banker scumbags who finance both sides of every major war and both sides of every major political party and consistently steal everything from you and are hatching a plan to exterminate you orderly, doesn't mean you can't have a few laughs. My very special guest is Dean Henderson. Welcome back.
Good to be back, Vinny.
Can I ask, what actually got you interested in the political spectrum and got you writing your first book?
Well, the political stuff, I guess, started when I went to college, had some good professors, and, you know, I was just a farm kid. I was a jock. I was like the All-State middle linebacker in 4-H. I showed cattle, and I grew up on a cattle ranch and pretty sheltered, you know, lived out in South Dakota, pretty sheltered, but got turned on to some good ideas by some good professors, and then I started traveling, and I went to Nicaragua to witness the Civil War there in 1984. And as far as the first book, I did a master's thesis in environmental studies at the University of Montana back in 91. And that was during the Gulf War. So Missoula actually had the biggest per capita protest in the U.S. at that time. Like we had half of the town marching. And we were being surveilled and the FBI and all kinds of stuff. You know, a lot of people kind of ended up leaving town, including me, because of that. But I started doing that thesis, and it was about the Middle East oil situation, because they wanted to figure out, well, who's making the money? Why is this going on? And I just continued it from there, and then I started researching the conspiracy stuff and the Freemasons and Muslim Brotherhood and the Illuminati and Kabbalah and all this crazy stuff, and I kind of overlaid that over my thesis, and that's this book. So I 13 years, I guess, I researched this book, and they've tried to kill me twice, you know, and I've survived both attempts. And
Would you be able to describe those attempts on your life if it's not too, you know, horrible to
No, I'd love to. That's on the record. I like to talk about it as much as I can. Well, the first was in New Mexico, and I was emailing this buddy of mine about how I was meeting these people at these smelters in New Mexico and Arizona, and all of them happened to be on the 33rd parallel, which is pretty weird, right?
Oh, of course.
They were copper smelters, Morenci and Silver City, and they were bringing cocaine in there. The CIA was bringing cocaine in there, and I had workers working there who told me this. And I think they're processing the stuff there, actually, and smuggled it in. And so I emailed my friend about this. Well, next thing you know, my van was sabotaged, the motor mounts were cut through, and broke down in the middle of the road. We had to hitchhike, two dogs, my wife and I, all our stuff, and had to go to a hotel in Las Cruces, New Mexico. Well, one Sunday afternoon, I'm watching a football game, and the room next to me just blows up. And it turns out the numbers on the rooms were wrong, and it should have been where we were staying. This was like 12, 14, 13 instead of 12, 13, 14. Blew up. I drug a guy out. He was dead. I covered him with a blanket. He was on fire. Didn't make it. The next day, the media reported that he was Arab. This was the night before 2000, the millennium. This was December 31st, 1999. And it was Mexican. The guy was Mexican. I saw him. He wasn't Arab. So it was the two things. They were trying to kill me, and then they were trying to scare people with this Arab story that was bunk. So that was the first time. And the last time was 2009 on the Zimbabwe-South Africa border. And I'm assuming the Rothschilds called that in because I was talking about how they own the whole part of the world and they're coming out of Zimbabwe. I got through that border fine. Got to the South Africa border. This guy comes up. He's got an AK-47 and he's wearing plain clothes, brown jacket. He's got a bunch of thugs with him with guns. Took all our passports. We were in a bush taxi. There's like 12 of us probably. Jill and I were the only white people, the only, you know, foreigners. And kept my passport. Gave everybody else their passport, but I kept mine. And drove back to the border, and then it was a big delay, and we didn't know what was going on. I finally got my passport back, and then we all fell asleep. But while we were sleeping, they stuck a needle through my shoe between a big toe and the first toe, you know? And you've probably seen that movie. What's that George Clooney movie where they do that? They kill a guy that way anyway. Anyway, I had 105 fever for a while, and evacuated to Nepal, and I survived, but I couldn't walk for a week, and they just missed the blood vein. I think they hit a bone, broke a bone in the big toe. But, you know, 0-2. So they're not that smart. See, that's the thing. Nothing to be scared about, kids, because, you know, they're not that smart. And I'm not, you know, I'm just, if anything, I'm just getting more radical the older I get. I'm 47 years old. I can give a rat's, you know what, man. I mean, you know, we got to tell the truth. Where are we going from here? Who knows where we're going from here? But I believe we'll be more powerful next time around.
Do you feel that you're now a very different person after these experiences?
I don't know. Like I said, if anything, it just makes you want to like stick it to them even more because, you know, it's pretty serious. I kind of take it personal when somebody tries to kill me, you know. So it kind of gives you an extra incentive, I think, to expose them, to really go after them and to lay one on them. And you know, I believe the best defense is a good offense. I'm not a pacifist. You know, I don't, you know, I got a line right here like everybody else. And you cross that line and, you know, they cross that line, all right. So gloves are off and, you know, don't come to my house. Don't come to my house.
Now, speaking of which, you were telling me over the break that you're now down the end of the road on a little 40-acre block in a little cabin with a wood fire, with a wood fire stove that we can see behind you on the webcam there. And I made a comment that you said that basically your tactic is to withdraw, and I relate it in saying that the tactic of withdrawing out of the New World Order system is the same tactic that should have been taken in Iraq there. Fracking withdraw!
Yeah. Yeah, I think you know, that's, you know, back in the 60s, there was this big debate between the hippies and the lefties, and, oh, we should withdraw, grow food, or and peace and love, or whatever, or we should attack and become the Weathermen and the Black Panthers. Well, it's a false dichotomy. It's another false dichotomy. You have to do both. You have to do both. And with the internet, you can do both. So you can live anywhere in the world now, including out here in the middle of nowhere, and broadcast to New Zealand. It's great, right? And at the same time, I've got a huge garden that surrounds my house. I've been eating fresh vegetables out of that thing since about, you know, March 1st. And we don't buy fruit. We don't buy vegetables. We've got a little chicken coop down there. We have pigs, chickens, ducks, burn wood. I've been to town in 10 days. So I don't, you know, people talk about buy nothing day. It's a big thing. Adbusters, whatever. We buy nothing week. I mean, we go a week without buying anything. And I don't sell my labor. I haven't had a job since I was 27. That's the topic of my last book, Sticking It to the Matrix. It's how to, I didn't come from money, you know. I didn't come from money. I came from nothing. I had nothing, started with nothing. And at 27, I basically retired and said, I'm done. And I haven't had a regular job since. That's a fact. So it's kind of a book on how to do that. It's like how to game the system, how to get free airline tickets, how to get, you know, get out of debt is the key. First thing everybody needs to do is get out of debt. And everything gets, you know, different when you do that. But there's all these ways to game the system. Not just to withdraw from it, but then attack it, go after it. Love the people, hate the system is the first chapter. And that's a really important thing, you know, in this age of cynicism where everybody's cynical. Oh, people, you can't trust their own. People are dumb. People are stupid. Yeah, you know, you get cynical. I get cynical too, man. I know people are kind of stupid. Yeah, for sure. But you have to realize the conditions that they've suffered under, and we've all suffered under. We all have PTSD, you know, because it's a pretty crazy world out there they've created for us. And it's getting worse with the media. You know, you and I can sit here talking.
I disagree about the PTSD. I think it's CTSD, current traumatic stress disorder, you know?
Yeah, exactly, man. It's heavy duty, right? So that's one of the reasons living out in the country is really healthy, because you can withdraw. You can go for a week without running into any tweakers, you know? And then you can get the vibe from the trees, the animals, the wild animals, everything. You can take that to town and you can sort of try to rub off on people, and it's a natural vibe, and we're all plugged into our cell phones and our smartphones, and it's really dangerous. It's a psyops program, all this technology. I mean, we're doing a good right here, but we're losing this battle, trust me, and this media battle can't be won this way. I mean, it can't be won on Facebook and Skype, and it can't be won. It's going to be won in the woods. It's going to be won when this whole thing crashes out and all the power lines are gone and nobody has a smartphone and nobody can log on to anything, and then just drop the thing and walk into the woods. You meet by a fire and you start planning stuff. And that's when we're going to win this thing. So that's why I live in a country. And the Ozarks, it's pretty, there's a lot of guns here. And there's a lot of people that aren't putting up with it here, no matter what their political stripes. I mean, it's backwards in a good way, you know. And I always say it's as close to the third world as you can get without leaving America. A lot of poverty, you know. And that's the condition that we need. There's too much affluence. We suffer from affluenza. And again, people aren't going to really rise up until they're just totally at the end of their rope and they have nothing. And I'm talking about food to eat, stuff like that.
Maybe but they need a mercury. Maybe they need a mercury-based cash injection for that affluenza.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and it's coming. I think. I mean, this, you know, Wall Street's soaring through the roof, but the real economy is still washing out. I don't know how it is in New Zealand, but you know, people are day to day here barely making.
Dig this.
Nuts, you know.
Dig this. Here's how it is in New Zealand. A supermarket opened in South Auckland, and they offered about 50 jobs. Mm-hmm. 4,000 people were lined up around the block to get interview for these low-paying minimum wage supermarket jobs.
Yeah, things are tough, and especially for a young generation. My niece and nephews, I don't have kids, and that's one reason I didn't. I saw this coming, but you know, my niece and nephews, what are they going to do? What are the kids graduating from college and high school going to do now? These jobs are permanently gone. They're replaced by computers and mechanization and sweatshops in the third world. They're permanently gone. We'll never get – it's a structural change in our economy. And the only way they can keep revolution from happening is basically give these kids a smartphone and make them feel like they're – oh, they're so in touch and they're so cool.
Yeah,
so,
I don't have any food. How, is there an app for that?
I know. L-O freaking L, you know? I mean, it's just, it's disgusting. It's disgusting what they're doing, but people have to wake up and, you know, more or less, yeah, use the good media, check it out. But unplugging is a really good idea too, as much as possible.
I did that over Christmas last year, bro. I went up and I bought my computer, I bought my cell phone and everything, and I just left them in the car. And I avoided television, I avoided phone calls, I avoided everything, and it was all of a sudden as though a great tenseness had been lifted from my shoulders.
Yep. I've done that too when I've got rid of like TV, man, especially, and just like I have it now. I like watching baseball and stuff, but you know, whatever. But boy, when you get rid of it, yeah, it always. And we go years without TV, and then we'll get it for a while. Well, when you get rid of that TV, it's just this huge thing lifted, because it's just all this negativity coming into your life, you know, and just, you know, you're being abused by these people, and they're telling you to be immoral, and, you know, they're telling you to be a cheat and a liar, and just, I mean, it's just horrible. It's horrible. It's not human. And so, yeah, especially TV. TV is the worst because it's coming right at you. There's a guy, Jerry Mander, wrote a book called Seven Arguments Against Television. Great book. And it's not about, you know, everybody says, well, no, it's the content of television. It could be really good because da da da. No, he's saying, no, it couldn't, because it's just the nature of the passivity of it. Even the internet, you're at least looking for stuff, seeking stuff out. But on the TV, it's just coming at you. It's a one way street. So your mind just totally shuts down. It's not like reading a book or even surfing the internet. It's like coming right at you and your mind's just shut off and it's just absorbing all this crap. And it's 99% of it, you know, it's crap. So.
Mm. Yeah, I would like to have a TV channel where, in fact, ones that are now being created now, even by this very network right now, I'm using the new TV, things like Roku boxes and things of that nature, where you have like the paranormal channel or you'll have the documentary channel and things of that nature. And I believe that television can be used for good. And in fact, it's funny you should mention this, because that was the very reason why I quit university in the first place, is because we were given an assignment to do about television, and it's several options and things of that nature. Now, I don't know about you, but I coasted through high school. I coasted through everything. You know, I'm smart enough to just sit there and do no work and still get a passing grade. This time, when I had an anti-television essay to do, boy, George, did I work my butt off. I did referencing for the first time and read source materials for the first time, and they gave me a D.
They didn't like that, yeah.
I was just like, you bastards. I'm quitting university today. You aren't teaching me how to think critically. You're teaching me how to be critical of people who can freaking think,
yeah,
which means being critical of myself.
Yeah. Just, it's just like the master's thesis, right? You know, I was finding out, the Rockefellers own majority of Chevron, Exxon, and BP. They didn't want to hear about it. They're like, we have to take this out of the thesis. This is conspiracy. So, yeah, well, it's a fact. Here's the footnote. Here's where I found it. Want to go see? But it's like that. Yeah, I mean, the further up you go, you get to PhD level. They're just trying to narrow your base of knowledge down, narrow you down. That's what they're trying to do, and specialize you. They want specialists. They want specialists who can do this and specialists who can do that. But they don't really want people that can think. Are you kidding? They don't want people to think critically. I mean, that's not part of their agenda. So that's the only way you can do that is on your own. And, you know, so... But I've learned a lot traveling too. As I said, I've been lucky to go to 50 countries and backpacking really on the cheap, dude. Just unbelievable cheap. And, you know, I always tell people, if you don't have a job, go travel in the third world. It's cheaper rent, you know, why not? And so, you know, I learned a lot of how to live from those people, how to build simple little huts, how to, you know, scrounge, how to dumpster dive, how to live, you know, really from the poor people. So. Mm.
We'll be right back after the break. Dean Henderson is my guest. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on the fabulous American Freedom Radio Network. Now, I just wanted to quickly give a big plug first to American Freedom Radio. If you are capable of supporting the network, they're looking for regular contributors, you know, people who are capable of donating on a regular basis. There's a donate banner right there on the homepage of AmericanFreedomRadio.com. They gave me the platform from New Zealand. They're giving Australians a platform, and they're giving Americans a platform. And we all in the same boat together, ladies and gentlemen. Without American Freedom Radio, none of this would exist. And also on top of that, there's my own personal situation whereby I'm almost entirely 100% supported by listener contributions. If you go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, there is a bank account number there if you'd like to set up an automatic payment or put in a one-off donation. Just basically, you're not giving me anything that you can't afford. This is the thing. If you're going to donate or contribute anything to me, I need you to make sure that you're taking care of yourself and your family first before you even think about helping me out. You know what I'm saying? Okay? If you can't help yourself, you can't help anybody else. That's my philosophy. If you have something spare, on the other hand, if you appreciate the platform that I give out to people like my very special guest, Dean Henderson, and countless others, to share a very, very massive myriad of views, whether they be right-wing, left-wing, or don't believe that the bird that has wings exists. Well, you'll hear them right here on the Vinnie Eastwood Show. So if you like diversity, if you like having differences of opinion, if you like getting along with people and having a laugh, even if you have disagreements and things like that, that's what the show is all about. We're here to have some fun. Because if you don't have fun, what the hell is the point in listening to the radio? Dean Henderson is my guest. Welcome back. And what were we talking about over the break there? So we were having a few laughs there. Well, it's just about the fact that we're just having fun. You know what I'm saying? I'm actually really enjoying talking with you.
Revolution is fun. You know, that's what people don't get, man. I think it's boring or it's depressing or whatever. I don't know. I have a ball, you know. I'm doing what I do, and it's fun. Gotta have fun, like I say. Gotta laugh. Gotta keep a sense of humor. Very true. Yeah, don't let them take that from you. No way.
Yeah.
But
it's like in the Shawshank Redemption. You know how he's got I had Mr. Mozart to keep me company while he's in solitary confinement. They can't take music away from me. They can't take my cackles away from me.
That's right. So I don't know, we were talking about, the whole thing about it. You were saying about donating and don't donate if you can't take care of yourself, and you can't take care of yourself if you can't take care. I mean, you know, if you can't take care of yourself, you can't take care of others. And I think that struck me as, it's really one of the things I wrote in my Sticking It to Matrix book is, this whole idea that, kind of progressives or activists or people, they always, anyway, here they get this victim complex where they think they have to live in poverty or something. And then they know the right to start a little business, so they don't have the right to do this. It's the dogma, and you got to get rid of that dogma. And you have to form an economic base, some kind of economic base all by yourself, and have these little streams of income. And that's how my left took. I get some donations. I sell a few books. I don't make a lot of money, but I make enough money. And then the other key is not to spend a lot of money. And again, try to withdraw from the system as much as you can. And it's amazing how little you need to get by. But it is getting harder because they're jacking everything. And I mean, we're in depopulation mode, if you haven't noticed. I mean, they're definitely trying to literally starve out people. And gas prices, food prices, insurance, everything's going up. And it's the cull. The cull has begun, which is why, it's just urgent that we expose these people.
Yeah.
And one of the things that two themes in my book I think are important in the Big Oil book that I want to talk about, Vinny. One is that the whole thing emanates from the city of London. People have this illusion that America is the great superpower that runs everything. It's not. We've been used. We're like a Hessianized mercenary force for these city of London bankers. 5 of the 8 families that own the Federal Reserve, the 8 families, 5 of the 8 are European. It's old money. It's all based in the city of London, which is a separate jurisdiction from Great Britain. They have the Temple Bar there, which is the Knights Templar thing. And that's where all the global British maritime law comes from that. And this British Commonwealth, which you guys are a part of, it's nothing more than a British empire disguised and toned down. That's one thing you guys need to do is ditch the Queen. Got to get rid of that system. Look what happened to Gough Whitlam in Australia in 1975. They literally threw him out for trying to form a mineral cartel, and the Queen did it, And this Governor General stuff, and You know, that's how the British rule the world, is this Commonwealth, and then they use America and Israel to do their bidding. Israel is sort of the Rockefeller, Rothschild pivot in the Middle East to protect the oil interests, but it's controlled by the City of London. America is the mercenary Hessianized force. We have the guns, you know, we have, and because we have the guns, we also have the stuff, because they have to keep the peasants and, you know, happy here and distracted so that they can keep using us and killing our boys die. Our money gets spent. Who benefits? Well, Royal Dutch Shell got the first contract in Iraq and BP got the second. Okay. So that's one theme in the book. The other is that the Islamists, Al Qaeda, these people are a creation of British intelligence, the CIA and Mossad, and nothing more. I know this thing in London today, this British soldier got stabbed or macheted or whatever. That was definitely, I bet you anything, that's a false flag operation designed to, you know, convince the British that the war in Syria is going to be good when it comes. Think Boston bombing was the same thing here. The Sarnoff brother, he was being run by the CIA. His uncle worked for the CIA. They sent him to Georgia in 2008 to train him and all this. I wrote a couple articles about it. You can read them on my blog, but these Islamists are a creation of Western intelligence to get us to hate Muslims. That's the key, because they know we're going to go to war in this part of the world, because guess what? That's where the oil is at. So that's those two themes, I think, are very important, and people should study those two things really closely.
Mm. Now, in terms of keeping yourself alive and going through it, we talked over the break about multiple sources of income, and we also talked about education and over-specialization, because that's what happens. In order to enslave people, you make sure that they only have one skill to sell their labor, and so that way you can just take them out by taking out one thing. If you have multiple sources of income, like myself and yourself do, and a little bit dribbling in from here there, it adds up to enough to live on, and even if you lose a little bit here or there, you usually are able to make do. And this is a sustainable way of generating income that, well, essentially, I think the whole economy should really be structured this way, and having over specialization and only having one job and one skill, I think that's really dangerous, and essentially it makes people, I think, maybe depressed. Because they don't have a much of a choice. You know, it's like, I'm an accountant, so I have to be an accountant.
Yeah, it's horrible. And it's all just in the service of the Illuminati bankers, man. Let's face it. I mean, most people in this world are worker bees for the bankers, whether they know it or not. And that depresses the hell out of people, I'm sure, right? So what we all need to do, we need a general strike. We need a general strike. Everybody should just organize a general strike, not show up for work. We'll see how fast this thing crashes out. And that's good. It needs to crash out. Because, again, the only way we're going to get the political awareness we need to get rid of these bankers, to nationalize the Federal Reserve. That's my pet issue in America anyways, nationalize the Federal Reserve. I think your pet issue should be nationalized Bank of New Zealand. I think we all got to get together. And because every evil emanates from this private banking cartel. And Thomas Jefferson, in my country anyway, argued for a public central bank right off the bat. And he lost. Alexander Hamilton won. He was a Rothschild agent. Lincoln tried to nationalize it. He was killed. Kennedy tried to nationalize it. He was killed. That's why
What I love about Andrew Jackson is the fact that he had an assassination attempt on his life, and the assassin had two pistols, and they both misfired.
Yeah, and also James Garfield and William McKinley. Every assassination attempt in America has been due to attempts to nationalize the Federal Reserve. So,
even Kennedy, it was presidential directives 11110 and 11111 that were to abolish the CIA and the Federal Reserve, and then a couple of weeks later, boom.
Yep, that's right. That's exactly right. Almost 100 years of the day that they killed Lincoln, when he issued the Lincoln Greenbacks. So it has to be done. People have known this throughout history for many hundreds of years. And until you do that, I mean, if we just nationalize the central banks, guess what? All the debt of the world goes away. All the sovereign debt goes away. Imagine what New Zealand could do without any debt, what America could do without $16 trillion in debt. Well, we'd have a little bit left. We'd have about $3 billion to the Chinese, the Japanese, and the Saudis and stuff, which I think we should honor and pay off. But most of it's to these eight families. And think about all the good things we could do. If, and then, you know, personal debt. You go to a credit system.
I reckon, Dean, that we need an international jubilee. Call off all debts everywhere today.
I agree. But you have to, before you do that, I wrote a five-part series called The Federal Reserve Cartel. The first four parts are the chapter 19 of the book called The Eight Families. The fifth part is my solution. There's several things we have to do before we nationalize the banks. First of all, we've got to get people out of this. In America, we have this 401k system for retirement. It's horrible. Your employer matches half, and then you put half, but it all goes into the stock market or the bond market or something that's controlled by these guys. Got to change that to a public infrastructure fund. Say you build roads out of it, whatever. So we got to switch people out of that, because otherwise, see, Wall Street's going to crash when we nationalize these guys. So that we have to think through. We also have to withdraw from the WTO and all these trade agreements, because they don't allow it to happen. We have to fix our currency like Malaysia did during the 99 crisis, fix it, because otherwise they'll crash our currency if we do this, unless we do it all together at one time.
Yeah.
But there's several things we have to do part two, and it can be done.
Dean, I'm sorry, before we go, we've only got about 10 seconds left. Can you please quickly just tell us your website so people can go find you?
Yeah, if you just Google Dean Henderson, that's the easy way. I'll be the first one up. Otherwise, it's Left Hook, it's called. And you can also type in Left Hook. And all my books are there. My wife's also right there.
See you again.